Hello and welcome to Volume 46, Number 3 of Grapevine, your weekly local news magazine. Brought to you by the Greater Yarmouth and District Talking Newspaper Association, this edition is published on Friday the 16th of January 2026. I'm Graham, your presenter, joined this week by newsreaders Desney and Margaret. And in the news this week, a man dies after a robbery. We're getting a lot more windmills and another baby seal found where it shouldn't be. The news coming up in a nonce, but not before we've passed on our very best wishes to listener Anthony Wilkin for his birthday on Sunday. Have a great day, Anthony. If you pronounce it Anthony, then have a good day, Anthony. Okay, time for the first of this week's news with Desney and Margaret. Yes, it's them again, as Dusty and Co. were unable to make it this week.
A man lost a litre of blood after he was punched and glassed in the face after another punter lashed out at him in a Norfolk pub. The victim had been sitting inside the Feathers pub in Galston with a woman when he was suddenly attacked by 41-year-old Keith Vincent. Norwich Crown Court heard there had been no prior interaction between the pair before Vincent lashed out, punching the victim with one hand before smashing a glass into the side of his head with the other. Charles Myatt, prosecuting, said the attack caused a reasonably significant loss of blood and blood spatter up the wall of the pub. The court was told the victim lost about a litre of blood in the attack and required emergency medical treatment. Others who were in the pub at the time have told how Vincent jumped towards the victim before punching him and smashing a glass in his face. The victim, who did not make an impact statement about the incident to the court, has been left with a scar as a result of the attack, which happened at about 10:20 p.m. on March the 31st last year. Vincent of Peterhouse Avenue, Galston, appeared at court for sentencing on Tuesday, January the 13th, after he admitted wounding with intent. John Morgans, mitigating, said it had been a moment of madness from Vincent, who had no previous convictions and was essentially of good character. He said Vincent takes full responsibility for his actions at the time when his mental health had suffered due to a bereavement. Mr. Morgan said Vincent had been intoxicated at the time of this serious assault, but had since sought help for his drinking and had also written to the victim, as well as saving up £1,500 to put forward by way of compensation. Recorder Brian Whitehead imposed a 2-year prison sentence, suspended for 2 years. He told Vincent he was extremely fortunate to not be going to prison immediately, but took into account his guilty plea and his remorse. "I've no doubt at all this wouldn't have happened if you hadn't been intoxicated," said Recorder Whitehead. Vincent was also ordered to pay £1,500 compensation to the victim and to undertake 200 hours of unpaid work and a 20-day rehabilitation activity requirement. He must also undergo 120 days of alcohol abstinence monitoring.
Hello everybody, it's Margaret here again. So if you're sitting comfortably, I'll begin with my first story. UK Power Networks has apologised after sending letters to Hemsby evacuees asking them to pay more than £1,000 to disconnect the electricity from their homes. The company sent the invoices to people who had been told to leave their erosion-threatened houses after they had been deemed at imminent risk of collapsing into the sea ahead of Storm Goretti last week. The letter said UPN was seeking recovery of costs totalling £1,137, associated with disconnecting their homes from the electricity network before they are demolished. Great Yarmouth Borough Council has since confirmed the letters were sent in error and that UK Power Networks has apologised. A spokesperson for UK Power Networks said, "We apologise for any concerns caused by letters that were sent out due to an admin error. We appreciate this happened at a difficult time for the residents involved. These were delivered prior to our teams carrying out emergency electricity disconnections to the owners of 8 homes, including a commercial property in Hemsby. Our team are working with Great Yarmouth Borough Council to make sure people are aware they don't have to pay," the spokesperson added. Contractors are continuing to demolish unsafe homes along the coast this week after around 10 metres of land have been lost to the sea in recent weeks.
Blue Monday. The Arc Cinema is offering discounted tickets to bring some joy to the gloomiest day of the year. The cinema in Great Yarmouth is offering £5 tickets for each film all day long on Blue Monday, January the 19th. The concept of Blue Monday was first introduced in 2004 by psychologist Cliff Arnall, who identified the third Monday of January as the most depressing day of the year. Vicky Marie, cinema manager at the Arc, said, "We're delighted to bring back our Blue Monday promotion at the Arc Cinema. With £5 tickets for all films all day, it's the perfect way to turn what's often labelled the most depressing day of the year into something genuinely enjoyable. We're passionate about creating memorable experiences for our customers, and there's no better way to do that than through the shared joy of cinema. Films being screened on the day include the critically acclaimed Hamnet, fresh from winning 2 Golden Globe Awards, and 28 years later, The Bone Temple, starring Ralph Fiennes, Jack O'Connell and Cillian Murphy. Tickets are on sale now at arccinema.co.uk, where you can also see the full listings of film screenings on throughout the day.
A Grade 2 listed building, which used to be a bank, is heading under the hammer. 23 Hall Quay in Great Yarmouth is set to go to auction on February 11th, with a guide price of £80,000 to £100,000. It is Grade 2 listed, having been built in 1904. A spokeswoman for Auction House East Anglia called it a characterful heritage building, which is located in a prominent position overlooking the river and on the historic Hall Quay. She continued, "There is a large banking hall behind the two-storey facade, which incorporates a Venetian window on granite Ionic columns. The property has potential for a variety of uses, including residential, office and restaurant, and has lapsed planning for a restaurant and 3 self-contained flats. These plans were approved in March 2017, but potential bidders are encouraged to make their own inquiries with the necessary authorities." The spokeswoman said that the property needs clearing and is in need of refurbishment. According to the Valuation Office website, the property has an area of 323.9 square metres and a rateable value of £14,250, with effect from April 1st, 2023.
A British diplomat is set to return to her Norfolk roots after being announced as the new chief executive of the Broads Authority. Sarah Cowley, who most recently served as the deputy head of mission to Madrid, will take over from John Packman, who served in the role for a quarter of a century. However, it will be another 8 months before she replaces him, as she has to fulfil remaining work commitments. While managing the Broads will be quite the departure from her career representing the government overseas, the BA says she will bring an impressive record of leadership and delivery to the post. Miss Cowley, who grew up in Norfolk and is a keen paddleboarder, said, "I'm delighted to be joining the Broads Authority, and to have the opportunity to lead the dedicated team in this special place where land, water, nature and people come together. The Broads is shaped by a remarkable community, from residents to conservation partners, local businesses to our thousands of boat owners who are essential to maintaining the waterways. Together, we must conserve and enhance this unique wetland, ensure everyone can access and enjoy the Broads, and safeguard navigation for future generations. Responding and adapting to the challenges and opportunities ahead will require working together with transparency, commitment, innovation, and shared expertise. I look forward to listening, learning and leading the authority in the coming years. Her appointment comes after intense speculation as to who will replace Mr. Packman, with factions in the Broad split between those who want to see the new chief prioritise maintaining navigation, the navvies, and others who want more focus given to the BA's environmental duties, the parkies. Harry Blathwaite, chairman of the Broads Authority, said, "We are absolutely thrilled that Sarah will be joining us as our new chief executive. All six board members involved in the recruitment process believe this to be an outstanding appointment. We're all greatly looking forward to working with Sarah." Alan Goodchild, chairman of the BA's Navigation Committee, said, "Sarah's appreciation of the breadth of interests in the Broads is very evident. She understands the unique opportunities and challenges of looking after a unique navigational area that is not only a much-loved inland waterway and tourism destination, but an internationally important wetland and haven for rare wildlife." Tristram Hilborn, vice chairman of the BA, added, "She is a truly remarkable leader, and the BA is very fortunate to attract someone with such impressive expertise and experience."
The World Indoor Bowls Championships at Potters celebrated its highest ever streaming figures just 4 days into the tournament. A total of 16,500 viewers tuned in to watch Tuesday's Open Pairs semi-final clash between defending champions Scotland's Jason Banks and Michael Stepney against Paul Foster and Alex Marshall, who between them have 11 pairs titles to their names. Tournament director Gordon Woods said, "The live streaming by the team at Optical Media is key to the magnitude of the Ambassador Cruise Line World Indoor Championships, and to have so many people watching it is a great advert for the event and promotion of the sport around the world. And we hope it encourages people to try their hand at bowls and for those who already play to become involved in the PBA tournaments to continue to grow our events."
Work continues to demolish Hemsby houses. Work continues to demolish unsafe homes along Hemsby's crumbling coastline as council teams remain in the village following a devastating week of erosion. Great Yarmouth Borough Council said around 10 metres of land have been lost to the sea, with a further 14 homes now deemed at imminent risk of collapse. Demolition of the affected properties will continue this week. A council spokesperson said, "We strongly encourage any residents with concerns to speak to the team, even if you are not immediately affected by the recent erosion. They are there to listen, provide guidance and offer reassurance during what remains a difficult time." Last week, residents living in the most at-risk homes were told to evacuate ahead of Storm Goretti, following the demolition of 9 houses since mid-December. The council has reminded members of the public to stay well clear of the site and follow all signage as the area remains dangerous. As it stands, there is no government compensation scheme for victims of coastal erosion. In January 2024, the then DEFRA Minister, Robbie Moore, told the House of Commons, "There is no right to compensation for damage from flooding or coastal erosion, since these are natural processes. the Borough Council says it continues to lobby the government for changes to the rules. Instead, affected residents may be eligible for the Coastal Erosion Assistance Grant, CEAG, which provides up to £6,000 per property towards demolition and relocation costs. Local authorities apply for and administer the grant where alternative solutions, such as insurance, are not available.
More than a quarter of Norfolk's care homes and care providers are not good enough, new statistics have shown. A new report into the state of Norfolk's care market, including residential homes and home care, outlined how 26% of providers were rated as inadequate or requiring improvement by national watchdogs or Norfolk County Council inspectors. County councillors discussed the issue at a meeting at County Hall on Wednesday after long-standing concerns too many of the county's care providers were not up to scratch. While a Conservative-run council does not directly run care homes, it supports the care market and places eligible people within homes. There has been frustration at the council and among care home providers that resources at the Care Quality Commission, which carries out inspections, means such assessments have become less frequent. The council's own social care team has been carrying out its own checks to produce what are known as PAMS, as Provider Assessment and Market Management Solution ratings, which are considered a more accurate representation of quality. The Adult Social Care and Public Health Select Committee found there has been improvements, with the number of homes and providers rated good or outstanding stroke excellent up from 69% to 74%. But that means 26% are still inadequate or require improvement, with councillors particularly concerned at a slight decline in the quality of care home providers. Conservative councillor Stuart Clancy said his own experience with a home care provider had highlighted concerns. He said, "We have good people at the coalface, but unfortunately most of the failings are due to the management." Ian Wake, the council's adult social care director, agreed. He said, "It almost always comes down to leadership within the providers. If we get that right, then the rest follows." He said, "One of the issues was that there are too many home care providers. We need, ultimately, fewer providers and longer-term strategic relationships with the high-quality providers." Brian Watkins, leader of the Liberal Democrat group, said, "The results we have had here show there is a step in the right direction, which is very encouraging. But clearly, we must not lose sight of the fact there are still too many providers that do not appear to be up to scratch and who require improvement."
An ice cream seller has been fined £2,500 after police found a large quantity of Class A drugs at his home. Terence Wiseman had his ice cream van parked in the driveway of his Freethorpe home when police attended over an unrelated matter. Norwich Crown Court officers later found between £3,200 and £4,100 pounds sterling of cocaine at the address on August 16, 2022. John Morgan's prosecuting said police also found a total of £7,694 in cash. But, he said, Wiseman, 54, was to tell officers that the money related to legitimate earnings from his ice cream business. Wiseman of the Green, Freethorpe near Acle, appeared in court on Wednesday, having previously admitted possession of cocaine. Martin Ivory, mitigating, said Wiseman had pleaded guilty to simple possession of cocaine. He said the cash found at the property was kept in biscuit tins, clearly labelled with ice cream business. Recorder John Freeman said although a large quantity of Class A drugs were found by police, Wiseman had admitted simple possession. He imposed a £2,500 fine and ordered Wiseman to pay £1,500 costs. The total must be paid within 3 months, or Wiseman faces serving up to 3 months' imprisonment in default.
A fish and chip shop in Gorleston has reeled in a sought-after national award. My Place Fish and Chips in Baker Street has been named among the best chippies in the country at the Fry Awards 2026. The accolade was dished out after undercover reviewers showed up at the takeaway out of the blue to get a true taste of their offerings. And their meal was so good that the business has been officially ranked among the 50 best takeaway restaurants in the country. The takeaway was also tested on a range of other aspects, such as cleanliness, staff expertise, value for money, ease of ordering, and the business's social media. Rhys Head, competition organiser, said, "Over the past 12 months, these operators have faced significant challenges, including higher wage costs, rising energy bills, and exceptional pressure on fish prices. Despite this, they have maintained consistently high standards, supported and motivated their teams, and kept customers informed as changes were needed. Exceptionally high pass marks of 96% and 97% were set this year, demonstrating the consistently high shop standards in place. And as a resident of Gorleston, you know me, I heartily agree with what I've just read out. They do the best fish and chips, so there."
Mystery surrounds the death of a 29-year-old discovered inside his home. The body of Jonah Wenchella Siren of Newnham Green in Gorleston, near Great Yarmouth, was found on July the 4th last year. An inquest into his death was opened at Norfolk Coroner's Court, where details were provided by his mother via a statement to the coroner's officer. She confirmed Mr. Siren had been born on January the 31st, 1996, in the Philippines and was unemployed. Area coroner Johanna Thompson said the provisional cause of death could not currently be ascertained, despite a post-mortem being carried out. Evidence is now being gathered as part of the court's investigations. His family have been invited to provide a pen portrait and a statement sharing any concerns or backgrounds relevant to Mr. Siren's death. A full inquest will take place at the court on May the 6th.
A developer has been given permission to build another 28 houses in one of the biggest villages in Norfolk. Persimmon Homes has been granted planning approval by Great Yarmouth Borough Council to build a homes in the expanding Bluebell Meadow Estate at Wheatcroft Farm on Beckles Road in Bradwell. The site is on land which already has outline planning permission for a total of 850 houses. The latest homes will be built south of Beaufort Way and include a mix of 2, 3 and 4 bedroom properties. They will now form part of Phase 6 of the Bluebell Meadow development. The first 4 phases are now fully occupied, while Phase 5 is nearing completion. One condition of planning permission for the site originally required a foul water drainage strategy to be agreed with Anglian Water, but this is no longer necessary after the company withdrew its objection. Bradwell Parish Council had objected to the plans, stating that the village has had substantial development over recent years, without any improvement to local services, including doctors, dentists and general infrastructure. Norfolk County Council Highways did not object to the scheme, but the authority did raise concern about a potential shortage of parking. In recent years, Bradwell has been growing significantly, with hundreds more homes already constructed. They include the massive Bluebell Homes estate, which will ultimately include about 1,200 houses. Locals say the roads are already at capacity, while others fear health services, schools and other infrastructure will struggle to cope with the growing population. But last month, the Borough Council approved 2 connected planning applications for the village. Those schemes will see 77 houses built at Meadowland Drive and 29 houses on land east of King's Drive. Both sites are owned by Mark Duffield of Aldred Estate Agents, who were forced to take over the schemes after the original firm behind it, Lowestoft-based Wellington, collapsed in 2023.
Test. Build your love on a strong foundation, and happiness will follow you. Build your love on a strong foundation, and you will have a love that's true.
Build your love.
Keep your love forever new.
Build your love.
Keep your promises ever true.
Build your love.
Let this be your daily guide.
Build your love.
You'll always have her by your side. Build your love on a strong foundation, and happiness will follow you. Build your love on a strong foundation, and you will have a love that's true.
Build your love.
Give her a flower when she's blue.
Build your love.
And try some understanding too.
Build your love.
Don't ever let a day go by.
Build your love.
That you don't try to satisfy. Build your love on a strong foundation, and happiness will follow you. Build your love on a strong foundation, and you will have a love that's true. Build your love on a strong foundation, and happiness will follow you. Build your love on a strong foundation, and you will have a love that's true. Build your love.
Johnny Ray there, and one of his hits called Build Your Love on a Strong Foundation. A tenuous link there, and a tenuous title as well, I think. Anyway, we've got another one of Johnny Ray's tunes later on in Grapevine Extra, when Margaret remembers the 1953's disastrous floods. That's coming up straight after the rest of this week's local news.
Mike Wallace was best known for staging uproarious Punch and Judy shows, who brought smiles to thousands of people over a career spanning five decades, has died, age 87. Mike was best known for staging uproarious Punch and Judy shows and magic performances. He was a familiar face at Pleasurewood Hills during the 1990s, and his magic shop, Wallace's Wonders, in the Victoria Arcade in Great Yarmouth. Born in Lancashire and brought up in Slough, Mr. Wallace told the Mercury in 2021 that he grew up in grease paint. "My grandfather started me on magic tricks and I loved them," he said. "We used to go to music halls. I loved the magicians and jugglers and I wanted to be a conjurer. That's where it began." A career on the stage beckoned and he took any office he could get, playing the pantomime villain, acting in farces, producing variety shows, touring an illusion act and performing Punch and Judy. But one night up before a show and just a week after the death of his father, Mr. Wallace was struck by stage fright and fled the venue. "My father had always wanted to retire to Wales, so I said, I'm going to buy a house there, which I did," he said. He moved his wife and children to a five-bedroom farmhouse south of Aberystwyth, where he worked as a herdsman, rearing and milking cows on a government-run farm. It was a chance encounter one afternoon, while walking through Aberystwyth, that changed everything. "Someone approached me and said, 'Didn't you used to be Mike Wallace?'" he recalled. The quick-witted Mr. Wallace replied that he still was, and was then asked to put on a comedy evening. After that, he was back on stage. He secured a contract on a cruise ship, meaning he did not see his family for 9 months. Following a divorce, Mr. Wallace moved back with his mother in Slough until he was offered a job at California Cliffs in Scrapby. By this time, I had met the lady who was to become my second wife. We went there and we worked together, and we liked it so much we stayed, he said. In 2021, after a career spanning 7 decades, Mr. Wallace decided to put away the grease paint and prop.
And following his death, he's been remembered with affection by friends and fellow performers. Daniel Hanton of Hanton's Punch and Judy show said he was so sad to hear of the passing of Mr. Wallace. He said, I first encountered Mike performing Punch and Judy as a child, and he became one of my inspirations to perform the show many years later. My earliest memory of his show was in 1992, when he came to perform at my school, and I thought it was magical. Later on, he was a regular fixture at Pleasurewood Hills theme park, and I was more interested in watching all of his shows that day than the rides. One of the last years he was there, I plucked up the courage to speak to him after the show and told him how much I loved Punch and Judy. He was incredibly kind and generous and said, come back to the next one and you can watch how I do it. He opened the door at the back and placed a chair outside so I could see the secret of how to perform the show. Mr. Hanton later worked with Mr. Wallace in pantomime and the pair became good friends. He was generous with his time and supportive throughout and a regular visitor to watch my show at Britannia Pier, he said. Mike was a kind and generous human and had many wonderful friends all over the world. He truly lived his life to the full and, through entertainment, brought happiness to many. The Pavilion Theatre and Bandstand in Galston said, everyone here at the Pavilion is deeply saddened to hear of the passing of Mike Wallace. Mike was a true gentleman, loved by so many for his warmth, kindness and friendship. A natural entertainer, many of the Pavilion team had the pleasure of working alongside him in variety shows and pantomimes over the years, especially with our dear friend Steve Ace.
A man who used a JCB in an attempt to steal a cash machine from a Norfolk garage has admitted attempted theft. Alan Smith was charged after a digger was driven into an ATM on the forecourt of the BP service station on South Gates Road, Great Yarmouth, shortly before midnight on November the 26th last year. As officers arrived, the JCB was driven away, hitting a fuel pump and damaging vehicles along Exmouth Road. The man was then arrested on Ordnance Road. Smith, 47, of no fixed address, is to be sentenced at Norwich Crown Court on January the 19th. He admitted aggravated vehicle taking, attempted theft and criminal damage at a previous court appearance on January the 2nd.
A man in his 30s has died after he was robbed in Great Yarmouth. Gelson Fernandez, also known as Machus, died on Tuesday at the James Paget Hospital in Galston. It is believed he was married with children, originally from Cape Verde, and had lived in England for decades. He was known in the African Latino community for organising and hosting traditional parties. Police say he was in his 30s and the robbery is believed to have happened at around 4 a.m. on Blackfriars Road on Sunday. The incident was reported later to police after the victim was taken to the hospital with minor injuries. Police said his condition then deteriorated. A post-mortem examination is due to be carried out tomorrow to establish the cause of death and whether there is any connection to the robbery. Paying tribute, friend Nuno Almeida said, today I pay tribute to a brilliant man, Machus Fernandez, a devoted husband, a loving father, a loyal friend and a truly hard-working soul. Machus was loved by everyone who had the privilege to know him. His kindness, strength and good heart will never be forgotten. My deepest condolences to his family and friends during this difficult time. May his memory continue to shine brightly in all our hearts. Another friend said Gelson Fernandez, mostly known as Matias Fernandez, was an event promoter. He promoted a lot of Afro parties in Yarmouth for his community. He was always very friendly, and everybody was always friendly and nice with him too. Osvaldo Semedo, 26, of King Street, Great Yarmouth, was arrested on suspicion of robbery in connection with the incident. He was taken to Great Yarmouth Police Investigation Centre for questioning, charged with robbery, and appeared at Norwich Magistrates Court and has been remanded into custody.
A positive meeting has taken place between Caister Parish Council and Lidl among plans to open a new store. The council held a meeting with representatives from Lidl on Monday evening. The supermarket chain hopes to open a new store on land adjacent to Yarmouth Stadium, next to the junction between Yarmouth Road and the Caister Bypass. Kevin Wood, chairman of Caister Parish Council, said, "It was quite a positive meeting. Our main concerns were the safety on the island, which falls under the remit of Norfolk Highways. The site is only 50 metres away from a sewage treatment plant, which has been blamed for the Caister Pong in the village." Mr Wood said, "The smell from the sewage, I'm not sure that they were aware of that. It's right next to the sewage site, and we have had issues with that over the last 3 years. He also said the parish council wants to keep the current Lidl site in the village as a retail unit and sought some assurances from Lidl that they would do what they could to keep it that way. The proposals now go back to Great Yarmouth Borough Council for further consideration."
A gaping pothole has slashed a driver's tyres and caused more than £300 worth of damage. The pothole was located on Mill Lane just outside Martham and is said to have posed a significant threat to drivers in the area. Matt Robinson, 42, and who lives in Martham, fell victim to the pothole in his grey Peugeot. He said, "I set off early in the morning to drive to Cambridge. I went over it and heard an almighty bang. By the time I got home, I realised I had two flat tyres. £375 later, I got two new tyres. With the snow, it made it worse. I didn't go anywhere in the end. It would be nice if the small potholes were fixed before they became big potholes, so it wouldn't damage people's cars." Mr Robinson said he reported the pothole to the County Council, and since then, the pothole in question has been repaired. It comes as MP for Great Yarmouth, Rupert Lowe, has announced a new pothole complaint service. Mr Lowe has set up an online service where people can report potholes in his constituency directly to him.
A seal pup that was rescued after a postman found her sitting on a doorstep has been named. The pup was just 1 to 2 weeks old when she was discovered in a front garden in Galston. The postman reported it and the pup was picked up by Dan Goldsmith from Marine and Wildlife Rescue. She was taken to the RSPCA East Winch Wildlife Centre, where the team checked her over. The seal weighed just 11.8 kilograms, that's 26 pounds, which made her underweight for her age and meant she could not be released back into the wild. The pup must now go under months of rehabilitation, but she is settling in well at the centre, where she has been fondly named Cold Call as a nod to her story so far. Cold Call is one of 32 grey seal pups currently being cared for at the centre. Many of them were taken in following storms and tidal surges last November. Evangelos Okilias, the centre manager, said, "Sadly, some seals were swept away from their mums in the high tides, or some sustained wounds from being hit against the rocks. There have been some really curious places where these seals have been found, but I have to say Cold Call is one of the most unusual. Although we are caring for one seal named Anks, which was found on the edge of a muddy field."
The ramp down to a popular beach has been blocked off after Storm Goretti. North Norfolk District Council, has temporarily closed the ramp at Haysborough. A spokeswoman said they are monitoring the weather forecast over the winter period. They will assess when they are able to recut the ramp and reopen it safely. The weather has been very cold and wet so far in 2026. Last Tuesday, Norfolk was the coldest place in the UK, with temperatures of minus 12.5 degrees centigrade being recorded in Marham. As the week progressed, the French-named Storm Goretti swept across the UK, leaving more snow and heavy rain in its wake. The Met Office issued a yellow weather warning on Thursday and Friday, which meant 25 millimetres to 30 millimetres of rain could fall. Haysborough has long been the subject of concerns about erosion. In the last 20 years, about 100 metres of land has been lost in parts of the village. It has been predicted that the rate of erosion could continue at this pace for the next 20 years.
Photos show a wrecked van in the aftermath of a crash involving a Royal Mail vehicle in Galston. The three-vehicle crash happened in Beccleshaw, Galston, just before 10 a.m. on Monday. Police and ambulances attended the scene, and an adult man was taken to the James Paget Hospital for further assessment and treatment. An eyewitness said, "It's very badly damaged at the front end. The side airbags in the Royal Mail van had gone off. I think an accident investigation may be required. The white van passenger door was open, like someone had to be extricated." Only the white van driver was at the scene with the police, so I presume the Royal Mail driver was at the hospital, or a passenger from the white van, if there was one. A full road closure was in place in Beccles Road at the time. No pictures have surfaced of the third vehicle that was involved in the collision, and it remains unclear if it was recovered before the two vans.
The government has announced the biggest ever expansion of offshore wind farms in the UK, which could see hundreds of turbines built off the Norfolk coast. Energy Secretary Ed Miliband said the expansion represents a monumental step towards clean power by 2030, a target the government is currently on course to miss by as much as a decade. However, the subsidy contracts handed to developers today could add up to £1.8 billion a year in green levies to energy bills. The wind farms have a capacity of 8.4 gigawatts, enough to power more than 12 million homes. More than a third of the total capacity has been awarded to projects off the coast of Norfolk. German energy company RWE has been awarded contracts for 6.8 GW, including 3 GW for its Vanguard East and Vanguard West wind farm projects as part of its Norfolk offshore wind zone, 1.5 GW for each project. RWE's Norfolk offshore wind zone is a cluster of three large wind farm projects, which also include Boreas. The UK currently has 16 GW of operational offshore wind farms, generating enough electricity to power more than 16 million homes. An additional 7.6 GW are under construction. Wind farm developers have been handed contracts guaranteeing that both households and businesses will pay a fixed price for the power they generate for 20 years. Adam Ezemel, RWE's Vanguard Projects lead, said, "We're delighted with the results of the auction today, which have confirmed a long-term offtake contract for the Vanguard West and East offshore wind farms. Onshore construction works are already underway and progressing well, and this outcome represents an important milestone in the delivery of the projects. We will ensure that our local communities, suppliers and other relevant stakeholders remain fully informed as the projects move forward."
Well, that's all the news we've got for you for this week. So, welcome to Grapevine Extra. And it wouldn't be Grapevine without a bit of nostalgia, starting this week with Margaret looking at the Mercury from 1953.
Now, as I look out of the studio window here, it's wet, grey and windy, but not at all like descended upon the Norfolk coast in January 1953. Now, some of you might have heard this before, but anyway, here we go again, just to remind you how bad it was. And the headline was, from the Yarmouth Mercury, "Yarmouth hit by worst floods in memory. 9 dead, thousands homeless. Braden walls break, rivers overflow, sea pounds at hotels. At least 9 people lost their lives and thousands were rendered homeless. An extensive damage was caused in many districts, while on Saturday night Yarmouth was attacked on 2 sides by the worst floods in living memory. The disaster was a tragic link in the chain of flooding which swept the east and southeast coasts as a grim combination of high tides and northerly gales forced the sea inland at low points all along the coast. At Yarmouth, the situation was considerably worsened by the bursting of the banks of the Braden Water at several points, which left water flooding several feet deep into South Town and Cobham long after it had subsided in other parts of the town. The damming of the breaches at Braden and other emergency work in that area has throughout the week been a major operation, into which the whole resources of the town and outside assistance had been thrown into ceaseless work night and day. The speed with which the sea and river swept into the town gave no warning of the imminent disaster, and in the low-lying riverside districts, householders had little opportunity to save any of their possessions before they were forced to seek refuge in upstairs rooms. It's estimated that 3,500 houses had been flooded, and many thousands of people had been evacuated from the affected areas, particularly from Lichfield, Wolseley and Stafford Roads of South Town and throughout Cobham, where the muddy waters of Braden transformed roads and streets into swirling rivers. There was a considerable loss of livestock on marshes and allotments at the west of the town, and on the seafront damage has been extensive. And several acts of bravery and stories from the people who were affected. And this one, well, I shouldn't laugh at it, but another man saw his family rescued and then moved all his chickens upstairs. And a Bells Marsh Road man spent 6 hours in a flooded stable because he wouldn't leave his mare. Now, this is a bit more light-hearted. I wasn't there because I was only about, 9, I suppose, at the time. Don't remember it. Dancers at the Floral Hall in Galston were marooned until 4 a.m. Sunday morning, as were customers in the Bellevue Public House. Now, ironically, I checked the entertainments page for events on that week. Several were cancelled, but 2 of the films was Esther Williams in one-piece bathing suit and Howard Keel and Catherine Grayson at the windmill in Showboat. Well, if you could turn your mind away from the horrendous tales of that week, John Howard Estate Agents offered a terraced house on Tottenham Street for £1,150, Seymour Avenue, a semi-detached residence, £2,450, and a small cottage at Reps, £650. No prices of any cars, but you could purchase a gents Raleigh sports bicycle for £5.10. Or you could have your hair done with a wireless perm for 17 and sixpence, or a Madison Tepid for 25 shillings. And the princely sum of 12 shillings per week, you could have a magnificent walnut cocktail dining set. This was a cocktail cabinet, table and 4 chairs from Brown's in the Marketplace. A gent suit from Hepworth's, £8.15. Have your coat cleaned for 2.11 at the Forum and the Arcade. Or if you could escape the town, hop on a train to Beccles for 8 shillings. Now, the hits of February in 1953, which I know nothing of, as I say, because I was a mere youngster, was Johnny Ray, Somebody Stole My Gal, Joan Regan, Ricochet, Stargazer's Broken Wings, and Jimmy Young, Faith Can Move Mountains. Well, there you go.
Somebody stole my gal. Yes, somebody stole my pal. Some alley tomcat came and took her away from me. They didn't even tell me that they were leaving. The kisses we had shared and the time she said how much she cared. Oh, now I know. Yes, now how I know just how much I need her so. I'm pretty broken up, I'm plenty broken hearted now. Somebody stole my gal. Somebody stole my gal. Somebody stole my pal. Some sweet talking lover boy took her away, I think, to play. They didn't even bother to come over, tell me, buddy, we're leaving. The kisses we had shared, the time she said how much she cared. Well, now I know, yes, now I know just how much I need her so. I'm plenty broken up, pretty broken hearted now. Somebody stole my gal. The kisses we had shared, the many, many times she said she cared. Now I know, oh, just how much I need her so. I'm pretty broken up, pretty broken up. I'm broken hearted now. Somebody stole my gal.
Wakey, wake! Hi!
Johnny Ray with Somebody Stole My Girl, followed closely by the version which I suspect most people will remember best, Billy Cotton and his band, and the theme to his weekly offering of Musical Mayhem on the Light Programme, if you remember that. Well, as we don't have Dusty, Margaret, Two and Julie with us, you could be excused for thinking that their habit of entertaining us with their idle chatter would be missed. Fear not, as Desney and Margaret One are ideal stand-ins. We will, however, get some TV news eventually. Just hang on in there.
Margaret and I were born in the same year. We would have been looking forward to our ninth birthday.
Yes,
in
we would. Yes.
Now we? That but we're neither of us in January would have
no,
been.
No, now that we're octogenarians, we can look back and think, I don't remember a thing about the gods, I have to say. Do
that,
you?
That would have been, no. Well, I didn't live here then, but no, I don't remember. I mean, I'm sure it would have been in the newspapers and I would have seen something about it, but I don't remember. And it would have been top of the television news these days, but not many people would have had television there, would they?
I don't remember a television set until my brother Michael and I were probably 9 or 10-ish. I can't remember. I can remember the black and white flower pot men. shows how educated I was, isn't it? And Andy Pandy. But as regards cultural programmes, no, I knew nothing until I was, well, getting on a bit.
I think we first had a television in 1955 because we had our television about few weeks or a month after ITV had started, and that was 1955. Yeah. So we always had two channels to pick from.
Oh, yes, you had to get up and switch them on and off, didn't you? No remote control in those days.
No. And before that, any television that I saw would have been at relatives' houses. Two of my aunts, I remember having television, and I can remember watching things like Mr Turnip, was it?
I don't remember that.
Whirligig. And I remember watching a boat race where Oxford sank.
Ooh.
I think that was about 19... It was early 1950s, I think, that one. But the very first things that I can remember watching, there was a girl that used to play out in those days where we used to play, you know, on the pavements, really.
We did, yes.
Even in the streets, because nothing came along. There was a little girl up our road who wasn't a very popular little girl until suddenly her family got television.
Ooh.
She got very popular. She used to invite us to tea and we went, not because we were particularly fond of the poor thing, but because she had a television.
Well, of course, yes. Yeah.
And I can remember watching Muffin the Mule, Prudence Kitten, silly things like that. Annette Mills, that was, wasn't she?
Yes, that's right,
she was the sister of John Mills.
And how we were obviously threatened that if we watched too much television, we'd have square eyes. Look at us now.
No, I don't think our eyes have changed shape, have they?
They haven't, indeed.
No.
But I can remember things like, you know, Z Cars and, I don't know, all sorts of other programmes when I got older. But I can't think I was ever much interested in television until Top of the Pops came along? The name has gone.
I know your brother was a policeman. My dad was a policeman.
Yes, that's
so
right.
He used to like watching Dixon of Dockery.
Oh, yes.
He said that was quite close to some of the police things that he'd seen, whereas the others were, you know, a bit more fictional than
They were.
There were lots of police programmes.
Yeah. I wonder what Dixon of Dock Green would say if he could come back now. Oh. You say about policemen, I can remember my brother Michael in the 60s with my daughter who was then about, I don't know, six or seven. He was one of the first to drive a panda car in Yarmouth, him and Paul Canwell. And he used to turn up at mine on Durham Avenue in Galston, up the drive, about 5 o'clock on a Saturday tea time, in the panda car, flash his blue light, and come indoors and watch Doctor Who with my daughter, who hid behind a cushion. Now, what my neighbours thought about this police car turning up at mine, I do not know. I never done anything, sir, Sarge.
I bet they didn't think he'd come to watch Doctor Who.
No, they didn't. I think, obviously he's been retired many years now, but I don't think Chief Constable maybe would have liked that. But there again.
Maybe not. We had a Chief Constable come round to our house once. I can remember. I wasn't there. My brother was. And he had a pop gun with a cork in the end. Do you remember?
Yes, I remember them, yes.
To shoot the cork out. But the cork was attached to a piece of string, so it couldn't go very far.
So it couldn't do any damage. No.
But he made a tower out of some bricks, wooden bricks, and he shot the top brick off with this cork out of the gun. And the chief constable who was visiting said to him, "That was a very good shot," and gave him a Throbney bit.
Wow, that's encouraging delinquency. I don't know.
You don't even have toys like that these days.
They don't,
Certainly not gun-shaped toys.
Oh, no.
Could be mistaken for the real thing. Yeah. Times changed.
Indeed,
they
have. Not necessarily for the best, I don't think. But we always go back, you know, about the old days, when you were allowed to play out and nobody worried about you.
No.
You never had any watches, mobile phones, nothing. But you knew when it was dinner time.
Yeah, nobody knew exactly where you were at any time, did they?
No. Hmm. I was with a party of, I said, the youngsters that lived near me on Arundel Road. and we went behind Smith's Crisps because there was a dike on Caister Road that used to
run
along there.
Oh, yes, I know where that was, yeah.
And my brother, who was intent on getting Tiddlers or Stanicles or something, he slipped into the green water.
Oh!
And I had to take him home covered in green slime. And what did I get? A clip round the ear, because I should have known better. I should have been watching him.
You should have been looking
up,
yeah.
That was what older children, how they were treated in those days.
I know, yeah. It's always your fault if you were the oldest, wasn't it?
He didn't smell very good either.
Well, that's our television talk for this week, really. I have got Radio Times, but we didn't know that we were going to have to be recording this week until it was a bit too late to get anything done. Yes. So I'd just like to say that on the front of here it says it's the Traitors finale. And there's an exclusive in this Radio Times, which probably doesn't tell us who's going to win anyway, so it's not really very exclusive. So if you're watching The Traitors, then there are three programmes this week on Wednesday, Thursday and Friday. You'll find out who wins. And the front says, "You Legend, Gladiators Ready," which seems to indicate that there's a new series of Gladiators on the horizon. If you're into your sport, then I think the Australian Open Tennis is the big one of this week. But you can't watch that on anything except TNT. I haven't got that. I don't really know where that comes from. But you can listen on Radio 5 Live Sports Extra. And there's also the Masters, which I did speak about last week. The Masters Snooker Championship, which is at Ali Pali, I think. Yes, Alexander Palace. And it's on. It finishes at the weekend, I should imagine. Yeah, the Masters is racing towards the finish line at Alexander Palace. Sean Murphy landed his second title in 2025, 10 years after his first, and we will be hoping for another run deep into the tournament. However, they don't know who's going to be in the final yet, obviously. And history doesn't favour the reigning champion in this tournament. It says since 2002, only one man has successfully defended the Masters Trophy, and that was Ronnie O'Sullivan. There's women's FA Cup matches. There's Manchester United versus Manchester City. Let's see if it tells us the best 10 things to watch this week. That might give you some idea. Well, of course, well, I've just told you that. Yeah, Gladiators is coming back. That's number one. Number two, The Traitors. Just told you that too. And there's also Winter Watch from Tuesday to Friday at 7 o'clock on BBC Two. Michaela Strachan and Chris Packham present Winter Wildlife from a new base, the Mount Stuart Estate in County Down, Northern Ireland. That's different, isn't it? A new series of After the Flood on ITV on Sunday and Monday at 9 p.m. What else have we got? Well, People's History of Punk. Fancy that, Margaret?
No? Not really, no.
No, we won't bother with that one then.
No, punk bypassed me. I was a 60s rock child.
Yeah, me
too. But my knees tell me otherwise now.
Reset Your Health with Jamie Oliver. Ah, how about that? Well, they might do something for your knees. No, I don't think eating something good is going to help your knees, do you?
Well, I suppose it gives you more energy so you can walk further, maybe.
And it's actually a podcast.
Oh, is it? I don't do podcasts. So,
well, there you go.
I'm a technophobe, person, sorry.
Well, there you go. That's our little bit about television for this week. We'll see you all again soon.
Well, that's it for this week. Grapevine is copyright 2026 of the Great Yarmouth and District Talking Newspaper Association. News content is adapted mainly from the Great Yarmouth Mercury. However, the Great Yarmouth and District Talking Newspaper Association accept responsibility for editorial decisions made for this recording. Next week, your news readers will be Andy and Margaret, so we look forward to your company for that. But in the meantime, we wish you a good week and hope that you stay safe and well. So from all your friends at Grapevine as usual, it's bye for now.